November 30, 2018, is a Wyatt from Pedro show.
Thank you.
Why for Pedro show? Happy Friday. It's very different to have a Friday show, but that's the way it ended up. Brother Matt's still up in the desert, so I'm here in my pad Pedro, but I am not totally man alone because of those engineers in Estonia with their incredible Skype invention. I am here with you people alongside in Minneapolis, right?
Well, right now I'm actually I landed in Austin and I'm heading back to Minneapolis tomorrow from New York. I came in today, but yeah, I'm on like a 24-hour layover.
Well, his hometown, his hometown is Minneapolis. This is Dave Kane.
That's correct.
Welcome
That's
aboard, correct. Dave.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah.
I appreciate you having me.
Incredible cat. And I'm so grateful to Stevie Bono because a long-time listener, but never... And in fact, I think we shared labels for a little while at my last days in Colombia.
And I think we did.
Yeah, but I never got to meet you three guys. The people, listeners, they're a trio from Minneapolis, which is a bass, a piano, and a drum. Bad plus. But Dave's got a whole music story of his own, so we're going to get... Dave.
Yes.
Can you give me your earliest musical recollection?
Yes, I can.
Before you do that,
okay.
I should say that we started the show off with John Coltrane doing the Inchworm live at Penn State, 1963, and then Dave King with Indelicate, which is probably people opposite of delicate. I could be wrong.
Understand me.
Okay, now bring us that earliest recollection of music, please, Dave.
Well, my earliest recollection of music was hearing my dad's jazz records and then some classical music records and then 50s rock and roll music, which my parents used to dance to. And so I started to play the piano based on just hearing the music. They weren't musicians per se, but we had music in the house and had a piano. And so I started taking piano lessons really young and just was really interested in music young.
I'm curious. So they're listeners. They got a good record collection.
Right.
But they're not players. They're listeners.
That's right.
But they got a piano in the pad. Why?
Excuse me? What do they have?
A piano. P-I-A-N-O.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yes.
Why do they have that in the pad if they ain't players?
It cut out for a second. Yes, they had a piano. I think they wanted, you know, I have three brothers, too, that we all started on piano, but I was the only one that continued playing music. Everyone was an enthusiast of music, though, all kinds of music. So I have them to thank for, like, pushing, like, not... derailing my dream to become a musician. It wasn't necessarily like, oh, that's a life that you can do, but it was definitely encouraged to study music if I could and to learn about it and listen to as much as I could.
Sure, but I still am curious. Why did they have a piano in the pad when they didn't play?
Oh, well... My mother played some piano, so it was more like they're not really like professional musicians or people that had aspirations to creative careers or anything like that. But my mother was a teacher and I just think they were interested in, you know, just having the music in the house, and she played some piano. So that's what it was.
She wasn't just a strictly listener. She was also a player. Now, yes, I want to ask you, because it's trippy, but you know, guitar, flute, all the fucking instruments, for some reason, piano's got the stigma of the weird teachers. No, I've had so many people on the show, they almost have hate for music because of bad young piano experience.
I agree.
With teachers. I've had other guests, they had beautiful teachers, and it made them, you know, soar like an eagle.
Yeah.
So tell me about your experience.
I think I had probably the latter. The people that were sort of like, you know, the every Thursday after school I have my piano lesson. I definitely had to find the passion for it on my own, which I actually am really thankful for. You know, I became much more self-taught. I don't read music well, so I was able to use my ears really well. Yeah. And I would pretend to read the music. It's a classic story of people don't read music very well. I just would pretend and memorize it very quickly.
Okay.
And have them play it. So I had the old school kind of teachers that just... you know, it wasn't like they were exuding, they weren't mean or anything. I mean, I had one or two that might have been a little bit stern, but it was, I can hear you 100% that the dream gets killed by burned out piano teacher more often than not.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's
absolutely.
Why I switched to drum. Maybe it's something deep in the recesses of my mind. I switched to drums for that reason, I guess, maybe.
Oh, you went to drums.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm a drummer, so I mean, I by the time like
well, you know, I think in the old days, piano was with the guitar and the bass in the rhythm section, because it is kind of percussive. Correct. It is kind of percussive.
Absolutely,
because right, your fingers, you're like hitting the keys. Yeah, well, 100%. If you ask me, if you want my opinion, everything is fucking drums, and that's why they always make drummers look like they're retarded, because they actually have all the power. That's my opinion.
It's definitely based in insecurity, Mike. They don't know how to deal with the power exactly.
And in fact, this is why, and this is one big mistake we did in the Minutemen. George Hurley should have never been in the back. He should have been way up front. And that's the way I do my drummers now. They're always up front. You know, I talk on stage.
That's awesome. I mean, in jazz too, you get to be sometimes on the side. You know, when we set up, it's definitely not the drums in the back. You know, it's kind of a front line of drums, bass, and piano.
Well, Max Roach, every time I saw Max Roach, he always had a line, and he was on one end. Also, I loved his count-ins. And that was his count-ins. And
it's brilliant.
It's carnal.
Definitely testing whether or not people knew what they were doing.
Absolutely. We are right. And I saw John Coltrane's son, Ravi, play with him. I saw Delfeo do a bone with him when they were younger. And when he did his solos, it was always just on the hi-hat. Well, I shouldn't say just the hi-hat, because he also used the stand.
Right, right. Yeah, he's from an era where the hi-hat was, you know, that era, which I think isn't done as much anymore, is just like dealing with every sound on a small little bebop kit, and everyone was dealing with a hi-hat and hi-hat stand and the bottom symbol of the hi-hat. See all that footage now of Max and all the great drummers.
Well, the hi-hat is an innovation, because at first it's called the sock symbol, right? It's down, you only played it with a pedal.
That's correct.
I read that Miles Davis lost his voice yelling at Philly Joe Jones. They call it the sock symbol.
That's right. Yeah. That's hilarious. Yes, it was a sock symbol. And it just used to beat on like 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it moved to like 2 and 4, just keeping time.
Or at the end. Right? Right? That fucking thing. That was a sock symbol. And then somebody thought of, let's elevate it so you can use the sticks on it.
That's right. I don't know who did that at first, but it was definitely...
No, my buddy Larry Mullins, I've asked about this. The whole idea of the trap kit, he said, was developed in New Orleans. And he told me, actually, the toms was kind of a China thing. And gongs.
Really? Yeah. Chinese box drums. Yeah, I get that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean that was, you know, the drum set is definitely one of those like organic inventions of so many cultures coming together and sticking things together. Military drums and it's almost the original one man band vibe for sure.
Yeah, it's really a trip. It's really a trip. Absolutely. How that came together, and it's ubiquitous now. But it really came out of all kinds of trips, and it was known by doing.
That's exactly right.
Let me ask you some more questions when you were earlier on your music journey. What was the first record you bought for yourself, Dave?
Man, I'm so glad you asked this, Mike. I have the answer ready, because somebody asked me this. A friend of mine asked me this out of curiosity a few days ago, and I remembered it very well. My older brother, who hit me to a lot of like 70s, like things like Black Sabbath and things like that, it was credited as me kind of getting like, I want to get a record myself, you know, and he had all these records, and my mother took me to Montgomery Ward's, this stupid little store in Minneapolis, and it was like,
I know about Monkey Ward, they're all over the country.
Yeah, they're kind of gone now, but it was you know, when you get LPs in a department store,
sure,
as you remember, and I was like, hey, I want a record, and I was really like hurt that he had these records, and she was like, okay, I'll get you a record because you know you've been practicing and doing whatever, and I went to the record store and I didn't really know what to do. I was about 7 years old, and I was like, what do I? And I just looked down and grabbed it, and I remembered. I didn't even know what it was. I just grabbed the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Oh, wow. So Bee Gees, the Bee Gees.
That's where I credit my pocket, man. I've got that Bee Gees pocket, Mike. Yeah. I can hear it everywhere.
And great singers. Great, great, great group. Really good group.
Great,
and that movie was a trip, too. The whole thing was a trip.
It was.
Yeah,
it was because I had babysitters were all into that shit when I was...
Well, there's this guy, right? This guy. And, you know, if I can't be anything, at least let me be a dancer.
Exactly.
I love that idea.
Exactly.
You know?
It's kind of a great story.
Yeah, it really is. And the music the music totally goes with it. I mean, it's fucking righteous. What was the first gig you saw, Dave?
First gig I saw? Wow, let me think about that. It might have been like a bunch of older jazz musician gigs around town. But one of the gigs that stood out for me that I saw is that I saw Tony Williams play when I was about 15. Yeah, I saw Tony play in a small club in Minneapolis called the Artist Quarter, which is now gone, when I was about 14 years old, and it was like, you know, like a heat-seeking missile. I mean, it was just a life-changing, you know, in a small room, and Tony Williams blasting. It was very heavy. So that was, I count that as one of probably my first, like, seminal show of, like, seeing some real, like, a next-level art, you know.
We lost Tony way too soon.
Totally.
I think it was some kind of weird gallbladder operation or some shit. Maybe 50.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Nels Klein loved Tony. So, and little man, but Miles starts playing with him when he's, what, 17? In fact, what I read in the Miles Quincy Troupe book, he turns Miles on to Archie Shepp, Ornette Coleman, all this stuff.
But I think he did. I think Miles, one of Miles' gifts was having, you know, like younger cats around him.
Absolutely.
You know, like him kind of shepherding them and leading. I mean, he's such a brilliant leader, but then letting them do their thing. And they did, you know, Tony was too young to know what he was doing wrong, quote unquote.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, he just invented the whole thing. Miles was the nurturer of that for sure.
What was his band? Lifehouse?
Lifetime.
Lifetime, that's it.
Yep. Great band.
Man, what up?
I might have to take that name for myself. I'll take Life.
What a big
you got Tugboat. I'll take Lifeboat.
You know what? I want to play here, Femme. This kind of classical thing, right? Etude.
Yeah, this is a piece we did. It's by the Ukrainian, I believe he's Ukrainian, composer Georgi Ligeti. I might be wrong about his origins, but I'm a huge fan of his work. And we did this piece called Femme, F-E-M.
Hi.
And it's a piano etude that we converted to drums, piano, and bass. Sometimes we've delved into contemporary classical music alongside of all of our original music. This is the Bad Plus now from a record called For All I Care, which is from, like, 2007, I think.
Okay, let's listen. Thank you.
Thank you. achieve results that I've achieved. This isn't science. It's more like black magic. Still, you did achieve results that I have missed. Now think, what a world-astounding collaboration we should be. You and I, together. No. No, 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 no.
Watt for Pedro show. Yeah, that was the Bad Plus with Femme, Etude number 8. And it might have Ukrainian origins. We don't know for sure.
I think
we had Dietrich and Barnes with What? The Father Figures, Brand New, Kenny Boggle. New Hard Folk with Moon Bikes. Field Spectres out of Oklahoma City with Brain Zaps. Stoma from Rotterdam, Holland. Black Magic. Justin Wong with Night Drive with Shaman Bamboo. And then finally, Dave King with A New Stain.
That's right.
Okay, so you get on the drums. Now, what about school? Did you have music in school, like choir or the marching band or the jazz band?
Yeah, I did like the concert band scene. By the way, Ligeti is Hungarian. I just looked it up. I wanted to make sure he got the right.
Okay, not Ukrainian people. It's Hungarian.
Yep, he is. So
they're close. They ain't too far away.
It's not that far. I mean, there's a soulful bunch of composers from the Ukraine as well. You never know. I was in just the regular school bands. I never went to any special programs. And then
what'd you play? What'd you play at school?
Drums in the school band, and then I did sing in the choir some, and then drums in the school band. Then in high school, I was in the jazz band for a little bit, and I ended up doing some jazz band stuff outside of high school, dealing with I had a teacher, and then I got in some little ensembles at the school I was taking drums from during high school.
What about this trip, where after school, in the bedroom or cellar or garage, you play with some buddies?
Absolutely. Always garage bands.
Okay, tell me about that. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, like my older brother had friends that were in music, and a lot of them just played a lot of kind of 70s metal or hard rock. And so in the garage, we would just play, get together with anybody that had an instrument. The classic kind of garage band, it didn't really matter who could, how much anybody's aptitude was.
Yeah, right.
And so we'd play like Paranoid and things like that in the garage.
And what do you think of Bill Ward? I think Bill Ward is an incredible drummer.
Absolutely. Incredible. And I also
when I'm talking about, hear me out on this, lyrical.
Sure. Absolutely. Very lyrical, very,
right?
Very confident.
He phrases, right?
Absolutely. Total phrases, very compositional.
And I think he had some kind of jazz influence or something, because it ain't the fucking oompa. The guy, there's a swing. No, there's a fucking swing going.
Is. You're right, Mike. I think a lot of those guys from that era, when they were kids, they had a teacher that was from a jazz era. If they were in the 50s and 60s when they were kids, their teacher's probably hipping them to stuff, and it's in their playing. Ian Pace from Deep Purple, all these guys.
Left-hander, right?
Absolutely. We
were talking about Max Roach. When I hear Max Roach drum kit, we were talking trap sets too, right? Really tight toms. These guys, Bill Ward, very loose toms, very tune them way down.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I suppose that was like them experimenting with the music. And then, of course, Bonham, having the seismic weight he did, I think it maybe was like the sound of the day. I just love also, though, then you have something like Back in Black where you have Phil Rudd or whatever, and it's just so tight and like ringing in the toms, no ringing in the snare, almost like 1980 when it came out. Like that kind of snare sound made its way into hard rock as well.
Can I ask you about a snare sound?
Sure.
Slider. I think his name was Bill Curry, T-Rex.
Yes.
Is that the most bitchin' fucking snare sound?
It's incredible.
It's so like fucking fat.
Tuned low and fat. Yeah, exactly. Tuned low and super fat.
But still, you can hear the wires.
Absolutely. It's like the thud. It's like closing the door of a Mercedes or something. It's unbelievable.
I think it's Tony Visconti. I think it's a bass man who produced that. But it's such a good fucking sound.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, the Paranoid album with Bill Ward. Oh my God! All the phrasing, all the parts.
Absolutely.
Very, very lyrical. Okay, tell me about the first gig you did.
The first gig I did, I remember that as well. I played, and this is a funny story. Okay, I'll do it quick, Mike. I had my friends and I were asked if we could provide entertainment for an all-night event that was happening at a church. And I was in seventh, exactly. And I was in seventh grade. We were like, okay, well, we had this rock band, and we were like, okay, we can do it. And they weren't checking with the repertoire or anything. It was like, the kids are going to have an all-nighter. It's everyone's 12, 13 years old, and the band's going to play. And, you know, it's going to be hip. And so we went in, and we played, I remember that we played Cocaine, and the minister stormed.
Right? J.J. Cale.
Well, Clapton.
Oh yeah,
Clapton,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cover.
And the yeah, but that was way hip for Mike. And that's so funny. And the minister kind of like called us aside and was like, wait a minute, what is this song? It was one of the classic stories of like bringing that level of dark rock and roll into the church. So I actually lived it. I lived it, Mike.
You lived it. And but also like Ishmael, you lived to tell the tale.
I did so far, Mike.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Call me Ishmael. You know, call me Dave King.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
That's call mentioned. Me. Okay, now after high school, did you go to college to learn music?
I did not. Okay. I moved to New York quickly out of high school, and I pounded around for a little under a year, and then I actually moved out west to Los Angeles, where I lived a lot of the 90s playing a lot of different music. That's actually where I met Nels Klein. You mentioned Nels earlier. I know Nels pretty well. I actually played with him this summer. I used to go to his jam sessions at the Alligator Lounge
right,
in LA.
New Music Monday. New Music Monday.
And so, you know, I spent a lot of time out there before I was going to move back to New York, and then I end up moving to Minneapolis and kind of bombing New York from the outside.
But you know, Nels Klein lives in New York City now.
Oh, yeah.
To him, it's a dream, because he tried to get free jazz happening here, him and his brother Alex. He's got a twin brother.
Yep.
Who's a drummer.
Absolutely.
A lot of cymbals.
Yep.
A lot of cymbals. But anyway.
A lot of cymbals.
They were for years trying, in fact, Alex still is, trying to make free jazz happening in SoCal, and it didn't work. So he moves to New York City and marries a Yuka Honda, and he is totally hooked in with free jazz.
Yeah.
So even though he ain't got the weather, he's got the fucking vibe.
That's correct, Mike. Genius. He absolutely does.
He's a beautiful man. That cat has helped me so many times. You don't know, Dave. I owe him buttloads.
Yeah, he's a great dude.
He really is. Generous, you know. Great. He's a cat. It's not about the coin, you know. It's about the fucking art. I love him.
Right. Absolutely. He's bringing such a heavy thing to Wilco the last many
years.
Well,
I was going to just say, Mr. Tweedy kind of subsidizes so he don't have to worry about the coin. And he can let his fucking freak flag fly. No, I love Tweedy for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Me too.
Absolutely. Look, we're at the end of the first hour. November 30, last day of November, 2018. Just a Watt Peter Show special guest, Dave King. Hold tight for hour two. November 30, 2018. It's the second hour of the Watt Peter Show.
across great travails and contest, great contest. Blood cells fought for your very life. Didn't know you would be delivered from death's door, still foot stomping, raving about getting on with things, to be destroyed or not to be destroyed. That is death, beyond death, the question. You make a good choice here. And being a rescue doggy and all, sure to have caught all our hearts. And what a lucky specimen, self-outward and projecting, ready to heal and move forward. Hello, miracle man. I would not say you got by on the minimal, but boy, you really did come back. Let's hope and pray for no more cancerous cells, that ye be bold and healthy, live that life of yours, rebuild heaven from inside, cross more great ways with hope for the hereafter, leave a good legacy. Until now, let's hope you conquered. I want to be the first to welcome my hero.
Peter Show started the second hour off with Big Eater from the Bad Plus. You got something to say about that too?
Yeah, that was that's the first tune on a record of ours called These Are the Vistas from 2003. That's on Columbia, your former label. We
right.
did three records for, and that record was recorded by.
I was 14 years on Columbia.
Yeah, you were absolutely.
Yeah.
I made it about four, maybe three. Jazz record release schedule goes quick, Mike.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like a Minutemen tune. It's the same exact concept. They just release records like bam, 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 then you're done. You're dropped. That's how they do it.
In and out.
I love that track. That was written by the bassist Reed Anderson in the band, and I've always liked that track. That record was recorded by Chad Blake, a great engineer who worked out of Los Angeles.
Yeah, much respect, Chad Blake.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible engineer. He did three records of ours. The three on Columbia, Chad actually recorded.
Oh, bitch.
So, super, super amazing guy.
Yeah, big respect from Watt. Then we heard Ondi from Tashiwada and Yoshiwada. That's father-son thing in France. I think drummer man, this guy, Jeremy. Yeah, he played on the, with Carla Boslich. She turned me on to him. Then we had Joe Brewer from Madison doing Cross, Round Eye, Shanghai Band, but low-eye foreigners, guys, doing Genuine Cowboy. From Turkey, Kunyit Septici, I'm sorry, with Sebastian. And then Croatia, Troba Kova Kushna Pesi. With Armia, and finally, Happy Apple, 1996 AD. Happy Apple.
Yes.
Explain.
Happy Apples, but is a band of mine that's been together for 22 years.
Whoa.
And it's a saxophone and electric bass and drums group.
Like Bazooka.
It's actually a band that's based in New York City. Always has people. The two other guys are originally from Minneapolis, but that's a New York City-based band. The reason why I say it is because Happy Apple is my group that's based in Minneapolis, and has put out 10 records over the years, and is still going. And that's a track from 2007, I believe, called 1996 AD, off a record called Back on Top.
Did you know Bazooka? Now, Bazooka was, I think they're from Orange County. It got Vince Maroney, and they were sax, drum, bass.
Oh, cool. I did not know that.
It came out of this band called El Grupo Saxo. And Vince Moroni, he's helped me with a lot of projects. He can do alto and tenor and really good on harmonica and flute. We just did something called Tone Scientists. We fucking muscled up some good flute stuff. And yeah, the idea of the, you know, trio. I think you're attracted to that, right? I am.
I am just like you.
There's more room in the boat, but what makes you like it?
Well, one thing that makes sense about it to me is that, you know, if you're playing, you know, if the drums can be played, you know, with melody in mind as well, and, you know, more complicated rhythms, the more space you have to kind of express those things. Okay. You know, for me, I'm really attracted to that space. It's not so much about playing a lot all the time or overplaying or anything. It's much more about how you can affect, you know, the counterpoint of the music with the drums. In trios, you know, I've just always found that there's a way to kind of have dialogues with improvising with the musicians. Of course, I play in quartets too, and I have a quintet called the Dave King Trucking Company. I think we're going to play a song for that later.
Right.
But I do love trios, and I do really feel at home with that sort of, you know, that sort of triangular crossfire, if you will.
You know about Money Jungle?
Oh, of course. One of my favorites. One of my absolute favorite records of all time.
Fucking wild, incredible. Huh? Fucking
that
wild.
That is an incredible, very mysterious record. Unbelievable.
People, I ain't going to explain any more about it, but it's bad. You should check it out. Here, I want to play here the Gang Font. Gang Font has Greg Norton.
Yes, it does.
How'd that happen?
Wonderful. Well, Greg is, as you obviously, I know you and Greg are friends. And
me
and Deep
Boone
back
put out the first Husker Du album. 1981,
Landspeed Record. Incredible
new
album.
Alliance Records.
Me, that's right. Me being from Minneapolis, of course, it goes no further, you know, to say that, it goes without saying, I should say, that Husker Du were hugely important, not only in American music, but to the Minneapolis scene. And so, about 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, Greg showed up at a Bad Plus show. It turned out he was a fan, and he came back, he came and said hello to me, and he was introducing himself, and it was so funny. He's so very instantly recognizable with his mustache that has never changed.
Sporting Greg Norton.
Exactly. He looks exactly the same, minus maybe the short shorts. Anyway, he and I interrupted him. I just said, "Come on now, don't introduce yourself to me." And we were really honored that he was there, and I ended up getting to know him over a year or so, because he had a great restaurant. He's a great chef.
Right.
And he had a restaurant at the time, and I went there a few times, and we started talking about playing, and he said he hadn't played in a long time. I said, "That's a shame. You know, you're such an interesting musician, and he's coming from so many different places musically. He's got so much varied tastes in music. He really knows a lot of music."
Yep.
And so we ended up forming a group together with the bassist of Happy Apple Plays Guitar in the Gang Font, an incredible guitar player, bassist named Eric Fratsky.
Okay.
And then on the first record is the keyboardist Craig Taborn, who I think you had a conversation with.
Oh, yeah,
with
absolutely. Great cat.
And so Craig's great. I play in a couple groups of his. In fact, I'm actually feeling bummed that I didn't include a Craig Taborn track from a few of the records I've done with Craig of his own music on my show here. But so Greg and I and Eric and Craig made this record called Featuring Interloper for the Thirsty Ear label, which is an avant-garde music label out of New York.
Yeah, great.
And it was a great experience. And then we made a follow-up record that has not been released yet. Where hopefully it'll be released sometime soon. But we've had
you can always flow it to me, and I'll play it on the Watt from Pedro show. Let's listen to A Chance to Play Across the Shadows.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, because I'll play it, man. I Gang Font is a trippy band. I'm into it.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Thanks, Mike. I know I told Greg I was going to be on your show. He was really happy and told me to tell you a big hello and, you know, love
you. You know, I played with him last year with Grant. Last time I saw Grant.
It's incredible, man.
He was playing with these guys. Well, Grant was by himself, but Greg was playing with these Wisconsin guys called Porcupine.
That's right. That's right. He has a band called Porcupine, too. It's just his newer project the last few years. Thank you.
what you call. Me too. I'm glad I finally found your number. Me too. You know, you're the only one I can talk to. I know that's silly. You'll be the same person. Of course that's true. I just wanted to call and say good night. I'm gonna hang up now, okay? All right. Have a good night. Night.
Predicted. I know the language that you speak. I know the tone that you're thinking. I know exactly what you're saying. You just don't make no sense to me. It 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 just don't make no sense to me. Thank you.
a love that's shining like a harbor light. You're lost in the night, unless there's love, the world's an empty place, and every time. Is a lonely town.
Watt for Pedro Show?
Yeah.
A chance to play Across the Shadows, Gang Fight. After that, we had the Healers from Illinois doing Deep Freeze Part 2. They probably are in the Deep Freeze. Right. No disrespect, because big love for the whole country. Bullets or Balloons out of, what's the endearment? Spokanistan. Spokane.
That's amazing. Fever.
They also call it Methlehem. But you know, that's why you tour, right? You got to find this shit out. They're gonna tell you. And Patrick Grant with Ashike Oblique, the anthem, and Tolema Madonna. What kind of nonsense does it make? And finally, Dave King with Lonely Town. Tell me about Lonely Town.
I'll play Lonely Town. Okay, cool. This is an unreleased track of a record that I made with a singer, a great singer named Andrew Wallish, who's kind of coming out of an old school crooner, almost Sinatra style, but he's way weirder and really idiosyncratic, interesting musician. And I made this record that's going to come out this in 2019. Okay. And that's a beautiful old tune called Lonely Town, and that's Chris Speed on saxophone and a bassist named Josh Gronowski playing an old gut string upright.
Yeah.
And Andrew Wallish playing piano and singing, and it's definitely got, it echoes Chad Blake in the production. It's got a big, you know, the big echo in the
sure.
voice. And
yeah.
And so it's a really interesting record that I hopefully will find a home for in 2019.
Okay.
But thank you for playing that track. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful. And I'm into idiosyncratics. You know, Raymond Pettibone, he'd bring me to see Little Jimmy Scott, Ema Sumac, Blind Al Hibbler. I mean, the whole thing about having character, personality, not being generic.
Not, absolutely.
No Marlon Brando, you know. We want Marlon.
That's exactly right.
We want Brando. We don't want Blando.
Exactly.
And, yeah, what are they called? They're called, like, stylists. But, man, isn't that what fucking art is about?
Absolutely. I mean, look at Pettibone. I mean, come on.
Right.
The fact that you're,
so we're talking about signature, right? Yeah, he's not really doing Roy Lichtenstein kind of cookie-cutter Xerox.
It's completely original.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you start with something.
Absolutely.
Like, everybody starts with dough, but then how are you going to bake that pie? How are you going to make that cake? How are you going to, that loaf of bread, you know, all from the same dough, right? But that's where I think, well, expression.
That's right.
It's not, you know, we like to say keep it real, but actually art, I think, is to transcend some realities.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's it. That's
like John Fogerty. John Fogerty was born on a very northwest bayou. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, November 30, 2018. This is Watt Pedro Show special guest Dave King. Hold tight for hour three. November 30, 2018. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show. Watt for Pedro show. We started the third hour off with a takedown from the speech, Chris Speed Trio. Dave, tell us.
Yep, that's a tune called Takedown, as you said, by Chris Speed, an incredible saxophonist that's been based in New York since the early 90s, a musician I play with quite a bit, and that's his record Really Okay from about 5 years ago. And we made a second record called Platinum on Tap a few years ago, and then we just actually recorded his third record yesterday in New York, jazz style, do it in one day. And I love that tune. That's why I wanted you to play it. And he's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, tenor saxophonist in the world. Incredible musician.
Yeah. Wow, the tenor. You know, I think it's Selma, right? Mark Six.
That's
what Brother Steve played in the Stooges. And that's what John Coltrane played. But John Coltrane started with the tenor. I think it was Cleanhead Vincent that said, no, you should move. He went from alto. But I you know, a guy that was checking out on alto, Kaoru Abe, early 70s, Japan. Jim O'Rourke turned me on to this guy. Pretty wild. After Chris Speed Trio, we had Kwonk doing Mizulu, then Son Moy from Chaz Budnick meets the Matson. Number two, Still House Plants out of Glasgow with Koi, Dragon Blue. Yeah, that's Tenko, huh, in Tokyo. I think she was married to Fred Frith for a while. It was Stay Child. And then the Bad Plus with Hurricane Birds. Hurricane Birds.
Yeah. That's a new, that's off our new record, our latest record, you know, and actually it should be said that a year and a half ago, we had a lineup change for the first time in 18 years.
Whoa.
So we have a pianist named Oren Evans, incredible pianist you heard on that track.
Yeah.
And that record came out, the record's called Never Stop 2, and that came out, last January, and we've been touring on it all year, and that's a great tune by, again, the bassist Reed Anderson, incredible composer, and that's, yeah, Hurricane Birds, wonderful, wonderful tune, I love that one.
Yeah, it is. It is. Fucking ass kicker. You know, how did the Bad Plus come together?
Well, it's a cool story. We actually grew up, the original pianist, Ethan Iverson, and the bassist, Reed Anderson, and I kind of grew up in the same area around Minneapolis. Ethan is from a little town in Wisconsin, which is near Minneapolis, but Reed and I grew up in Minneapolis and actually met when we were about 14 and started playing together then. So we've been playing together for over 35 years. And so we ended up, you know, going separate ways for a while when I moved to L.A. and out east, and he moved to New York.
What part of L.A. did you live in?
I lived in a couple different areas. I lived in North Hollywood for a while. This is in the 1990 until about 97.
Valley.
96 around there. Yep, it was Valley, and then for a while in Santa Monica. I was just, it was like, you know, trying to find someplace affordable was
both those neighborhoods ain't really affordable.
Right. Especially now, I mean,
you should have came to Pedro, Dave.
You should have came to Pedro. I was a Van Nuys dude. How about that?
Well, Van Nuys, that's Valley too. That's West Val.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so that's where Kate first lived. Look, I want to play the song, I Will Live Next to the Wrecking Yard.
That's my band, the Dave King Trucking Company.
Right.
And which all features Chris Speed and Eric Fratsky in it, and another saxophone named Brandon Wozniak, and a bass player on that track named Adam Linz, and it's a record called Adopted Highway from a few years ago. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's listen.
King wearing, and then Shy, they don't meet. Yeah, so this view we call Crown Shiners. It's been formed by the Borneo camphor tree. So this happened naturally. So the best scientific explanation so far is that the leaf, it produces gas ethanol. Yeah? It produces gas ethanol. So the other leaf from the other tree won't come in. So this is the tree where you get your big sniffer up, your tiger balm. The leaf of the tree is the one that they extract.
Stained with my own salt, can't stand it nowhere.
Watt for Pedro show. Yeah, that was Dave King Trucking Company doing I Will Live Next to the Wrecking Yard. That's such a trippy title. It's like, because yeah, some dudes know. Is like, I don't want to live next to the wrecking yard. But you know what reminds me of is when I visited in Camden, New Jersey, Walt Whitman's pad, the house he built there was right next to the rail yard. And they said he did. He liked it. He liked to hear the trains banging, you know, when they hook a couple bang against each other, so they hook up. He liked that sound.
Yeah, yeah exactly. It was almost like declaring you'll go someplace others don't want to go. Maybe that's maybe what it is.
Okay, it was a really trippy experience to me, for me too, Dave, because the ranger, park ranger, you know, with the smoky bear hat, he looked really square, John, right? But he's really into Walt Whitman. And then when we're going to go upstairs to where he conked, Walt Whitman used to conk, the bedroom, the ranger looks at me, he goes, look, when we go up these stairs, I want you to grip hard on the handrail. I said, yeah? He said, yeah, because Walt Whitman's DNA is in there.
Like wow.
He wasn't a square, John. Don't ever let looks convince you of a person. Yeah. This is what this guy told me. He looked me square in the eyes, and you grip it hard because I know Walt Whitman's DNA is in there. So he wanted it to go into my palm. Beautiful
That's
man.
So cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. Very cool. We had Emmy Apps doing Talk to Lion and The Stand, Broken Promises, Chronic Anxiety Interlude, Remorse Code with Sudden Conscience, and finally another Dave King Trucking Company tune, Parallel Sister. Tell us about that one.
Well, that's a song off of a record from the Dave King Trucking Company, like you said, a record called Surrounded by the Night, which came out about 3 years ago. It's the latest one. And, yeah, that's a twisty, turning, lots of odd times, but always trying to do it with a musical sense and kind of a throwing down sense, nothing too carefully played, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure. There is a weird kind of fucking stigma or mindset about drummer men, drummer ladies, whatever, stick people. That they are kind of retarded. What was that fucking about?
Well, Mike, I mean, all I can say is that, you know, the music you're playing of mine, I'm going to say it's not easy to do. So, I mean, you know, I'll put it out there if anybody wants to try it at home.
The point I was trying to get at, though.
You said it best. It's a threatening instrument because, you know, that's what makes or breaks the band. Everybody knows it. So,
well, definitely, you know, it's the heart, huh? It's the heart, right?
Yeah.
And what you're doing, though, Dave, is sort of like what Dave Grohl, this idea of drummer men leading the band.
That's right.
I love this. Nils Klein, we were talking about, he told me about this big bludge with Chico Hamilton, where he tried to have song credits and a downbeat or whatever, drummers can't have songwriting credit, and I've run into this kind of bigotry too with bass guitar. They're just bass lines. You're not writing songs.
Exactly.
Isn't that fucking stupid?
It's completely ridiculous. Exactly. It's just the idea that you can't be a composer if you're playing those instruments is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, right. So what you're doing, Dave, in my opinion, is really important. And
oh,
I want
thank
you to
you, Mike.
Fucking keep on keeping on.
Oh, man. Mike, it's a great... truly a great thing for me to get to talk with you. I really appreciate it, and you know, and that means a lot to me. I really appreciate you having me on. I really do.
No problem. Like I said, it's part of the debt I owe to the fucking movement. Let's talk about the future. What are your future plans, Dave?
I'm on the road quite a bit. I've got a lot of stuff going on in 2019 and got a few records coming out. That Andrew Wallace record will hopefully come out. New Bad Plus will be recorded. Made a few other records. Made a new one with Craig Taborn and Reed Anderson called Golden Valley Is Now that will be coming out. More of like a avant-garde electronic record. So I'm always just trying to put it out there. I don't know. You know, I don't know any other way. So that's what I'm doing.
Where can people find you on the internet, Dave?
I have a website. It's called DaveKing.net, and I have
that's DaveKing.net.
Net. That's it. And then I have there's stuff for me out there. I'm sure you can find if you're looking.
Okay, what about a young person or younger, more younger? right? Because we got rid of the old word. There's just more young and less young.
That's right.
Out, right? Okay, a more younger person comes up to you, Dave, and says, hey, can you give me some advice about this racket?
That's a great question, and all I can say is that, you know, try your best, even if this sounds like a little bit self-helpy, but try your best to just not give up. It can get easy to give up sometimes because it can be difficult, and I just think that it might be worth just pushing through the harder times. You never know what you might develop, even if you're a late bloomer on your instrument, and because there have been brilliant musicians.
Joe Baez's Sacratrust started guitar at 27.
Exactly. They're brilliant late bloomers out there. Use them as your guide, you know. You don't have to have it all together.
I think Vincent only painted the last 10 years of his life.
That's exactly. He decided to be, he taught himself how to paint after he was going to be a minister.
Ain't that bitching? You don't have to be. You don't have to do the little kid thing. It's anytime you want, right? That's your advice to people.
Absolutely.
If you feel
absolutely.
It, go. Okay.
You can develop at any time.
Okay, that's really optimistic. That's a really positive message, I think. Because sometimes I feel people. Well, I made it over. You stay back. We don't need that.
No.
It's been a huge honor to have you aboard, truly, Dave. Big love.
Mike, thank you.
What? Keep on keeping on. And when your new music comes out, let's talk again, okay? And we'll talk about the new records. Okay.
Thank you again, buddy. It was really fun to hear you talk so much about the history of all this music. It's killing. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, big welcome. People, November 30, 2018, Dishwap Pedro Show, special guest, Dave King. Keep your powder dry.